This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Fire up the DeLorean. We're going back in time. The History of WWE.com proudly presents the History of Wrestling Podcast right here on Place to Be Nation.
Got mail.
Welcome everybody to the History of Wrestling Podcast here on the Place to Be Nation. I'm Graham Cawthon, joined as always by Brad Stutz and Dan McGinn. Guys, how are you?
Splendid. It's a nice springtimey day here in the Carolinas. So with as indecisive as the weather has been, I expect there to be 14 inches of snow tomorrow.
Yeah, and Graham, as we recorded this, it was the first day that it was over 40 degrees in the Boston area in 43 days. So
how do you live like that?
I don't know why I live here, to be perfectly honest. There's really nothing redeeming about being in a place where there's four seasons. I'll tell you that right now. This is as bad of a winter as there is, and probably by the time this airs on Place to Be Nation, it'll probably have snowed again. So that's kind of what we're dealing with up here.
Like, I did, and we're going to talk about this later, but I did high school in Alaska, and I'm sure our weather was certainly of that variety, if not worse, but I don't remember it being horrible. I don't remember just thinking, oh, God, this is – because everyone lived like that, always. It was just how things were.
Well, you know the thing that annoys me the most there, Graham, is the fact that – a lot of people going into the week of the Super Bowl were talking about, oh, you know, it really hasn't been that bad of a winter as far as snow goes. And there probably only was about 5 inches total throughout the state as far as snow goes. And then after the Super Bowl, it just became a record-setting winter.
So you're claiming that those people jinxed it?
Oh, pretty much so, yes. I hate them all.
The entire state of Massachusetts?
Anybody who was complaining about a lack of snow, I just want to punch in the face.
Well, okay. I can say that, sure.
We're down in North Carolina, obviously not in the same house, even though it kind of sounds like that because thank you Skype. But I would actually like more snow than what we got here.
I would be
not
okay
there.
With the principle of getting more snow. It's just that no one here knows how to like react to it and live their lives around it and. They cancel school for a week and like, I don't care, but I get tired of people bitching about it. Like, nothing that occurs because of snow really affects my life too much. Cause at CWF Mid-Atlantic, we don't cancel a show for absolutely fucking anything.
Like the post office.
Right. But like, it nothing really affects my life, but it's just, you get tired of hearing people bitch about it more than anything.
Well, we're not going to do much bitching tonight. Tonight we kind of thought about this for a few weeks, thought it would be a really cool discussion point to talk about something that at this point we all take for granted. I mean, what are we doing right now? We're talking on Skype. What the hell is Skype, you know, 10, 15 years ago? Tonight we're going to be talking about how the internet and AOL and all those things that came with it back in the late 90s changed this industry. Change it in big ways, change it in tiny ways, change it in ways that maybe we're just realizing now. I remember I didn't – maybe I was a little late in the game. But like I said earlier, I was going to high school in Alaska. And the joke is because of the time zone difference, you know, if it's like 7:15 p.m. in North Carolina, it's 1990 in Alaska. But it wasn't that bad. That was just a joke. But I'm – Yes, thank you. But I remember back in early 98, my dad came home just randomly after work and said, oh, we're getting the internet. And prior to that point, it just kind of seemed like – the internet at that point was like you lived in a neighborhood that didn't have cable, but then there was this one house a couple houses down that had cable, so they were the cool people. And that's kind of what I thought of the internet as being at that point. And so, you know, as soon as we got it, and it was AOL, it just kind of changed how I saw this industry. What about you guys? When did you kind of get your feet into that?
For me personally, it was the one night only pay-per-view, the UK pay-per-view. It's like September of 97, I think. And I was at a my situation was pretty much exactly how you described. Like, I had a couple of friends that had the internet growing up, but it wasn't, you know, widespread. It wasn't in every household. And the only time you could really use it was like in like computer labs at school. And that was not really for anything cool or fun. But the day of that show, or maybe the next day, the time period that show was happening, because of like the 11-hour time difference or whatever it is, I was actually at a family barbecue, and my uncle, my aunt, and my cousin's house, and they had the internet. And so I got to use it recreationally for the first time for something other than something stupid at school. And I went into – obviously the first thing I did was look up, you know, whatever wrestling I could, and it was the WWE or WWF AOL chat room, and everybody is talking about the one-night-only pay-per-view that, you know, was – going to be on some kind of time delay in the States or whatever, but it was happening right then. And it was mind-blowing, just people posting fake spoilers and people posting real spoilers and, you know, this is happening right now or that's happening. And it literally was akin to like in a movie or something when you open, you know, when you see the character open, you know, the trunk or the chest, and there's the Holy Grail, because it was just like, geez almighty, like everything was at your fingertips. And it, you know, that's obviously become even more widespread in the years since then, and everything literally is at your fingertips now, whereas before it just kind of seemed that way. But I was, as a result of that experience on that day, I was the prevalent insisting, nagging influence in my house that we get the internet, because it made that much of an impression on me. And I was like, I have to have this. I have to talk to wrestling fans in like England and wherever else. And because I don't know, growing up when I did, I grew up in between the two booms. I was a very small child when Hulkamania hit, and I was more or less already out of school by the time the Austin Rock boom hit. And so it was a weird time to be a wrestling fan, and it was neat to feel connected to other wrestling fans, because I was basically the only one I knew in my school for much of my childhood. So it was a really neat experience to feel that connectivity, so to speak.
Yeah, I would say for me, I'm looking back at to like the mid to late 90s, but I might have even got a head start on you guys, because I had, or more appropriately, my family had a kind of well-to-do friend that they went to church with. And they were the type that had like horses, you know, they raised horses and they breeded dogs, and they had like this a million acres of land, and they had a pool. So that's why we were there quite often. But I tell that story to say that they were also the first people that we knew of that got Prodigy for their primary internet service, and they wanted to show us. Now, my dad has always been the type that as soon as something new comes out, he wants to check it out. So we all kind of crammed up in their little in their office space, and we were looking at Prodigy and thought it was like we thought we were on the Jetsons. We were so enamored by these graphics and you know, the slow loading pictures that would eventually appear, but we were so happy to see them and being able to like look up things, sports scores and wrestling results in my case, or the news of the day, you know, being at our fingertips. It was just, I now remember this day so vividly. Like, we need this. This has to happen. Please, you know, tell me how we can have this done. So for a time, my family also then would get the little disc at the supermarket or whatever, and it started off as Prodigy, and eventually it morphed into America Online, because that's what everybody had after a while. Because then that's when you were introduced to, like, person-to-person chats, you know. It was like, let's get all of our friends to, you know, talk about the day, or talk about what's going on, or girls we like, or that sort of thing. So so Prodigy led to the AOL, which led to the chat rooms that you were talking about, Brad, and we were definitely, my brother and I were definitely involved in a lot of those, from various topics, not just wrestling, but if you wanted to, like, know what was going on, or who was fighting who, or maybe a potential surprise, like, that was where you wanted to go. It could have been, like, Hulk Hogan fan 06547 room G, and whoa, that was the hottest ticket in town, was getting into that room G, you know. So it was just a crazy time, and I just remember now, looking back, because I was probably in looking back at that time, like, junior high, and then eventually into the early days of high school, where it just was such a time suck. I would be basically on this thing from the time I got out of school until the time I was supposed to go to bed. You know, we want to talk about brain rotting. That's pretty much where we were. And it was through that experience that somebody introduced me to WrestleZone. And just to be able to find out about rumors and spoilers and, you know, who's going after who, it was like mind blown. And it all started with a free disc from the supermarket so many years earlier.
Your 10 free hours or your 100 free hours?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I remember back in January 98, it was just a hot, hot time for wrestling. You've got WCW and WWE, which were arguably hitting peaks in both of those companies. You had ECW, which was super hot. And what had just happened 2 months earlier, the Montreal Screwjob. And so I got on the internet right in a time in which everybody was talking a lot more openly about how the business works. And so for years prior, really, I think for fans like us, our only introduction to that other world, that world backstage, would have been maybe through the aftermags. And, you know, how kayfabe they were at that point. So really, we didn't get much. And then Montreal happens, and it's like, wait, what? I think for a lot of people, it really broadened the appeal, maybe, of the industry. And it gave us so much more to talk about and argue about beyond what the main event is going to be at the next pay-per-view. Now we're having arguments about who should be in the main event at the next pay-per-view. I remember those early points, that the first few weeks or so, like you, Dan, I remember, you know, getting home from school and then logging on to AOL, and it would go, you've got mail. And I would go on to Slam Wrestling, out of Canada, which was one of the first websites that I ever found that would do shoot interviews. I mean, they'd be typed up, they'd be like Q&As with wrestlers. So I remember I found a Q&A with the British Bulldog that had just jumped to WCW, and he openly talks about, you know, getting out of his WWF contract and how he's not allowed to tag with Brett in WCW because of this contract stipulations. Found Live Audio Wrestling, which would do shoot audio interviews with guys, and so you're getting a new side of these wrestlers beyond who they are in the ring. They're actual real people. And so I remember listening to a few interviews, and they would be with, you know, random heel, and I'm going, wait, this guy is very likable. I like him now, but he is a bad guy. I do not know how to register this. And so I think to some degree, for those who were on the internet at that point, they start to appreciate who these guys are as entertainers, as athletes, and as people, beyond just good guy versus bad guy. Am I alone in thinking that?
No, I don't think you are. I think everything you're talking about is right on, and it also, I think, reflected and represented a big change socially, as far as society-wide. We were more interested in the dirt than at any point before in history. I think in a lot of ways, like, the Montreal thing is a great thing to cite as a tipping point, because it kind of gave, in some ways, it gave wrestling its first kind of tabloid story in the modern era. You know, there had been all the steroid stuff in 92, but most of us who were fans in 97, 98 weren't really old enough to, you know, be invested in that. But we were old enough to be invested in this. And it's almost like, it was almost like the OJ trial for wrestling, in a sense of like that kind of sensationalistic, crazy trial, you know, begat TMZ and all these other shows. And, you know, something like Inside Edition used to do kind of like personality pieces, and everything kind of became more tabloid and more sensationalized after that trial, as far as the entertainment media. And I think the Montreal incident of Survivor Series 97 is kind of that same moment for wrestling, and it kind of it correlated with the rise of the internet and that information being so much more accessible. I think it, I don't know which came first, but it definitely fed a need that a lot of people all of a sudden had to know more, to know the behind the scenes, to know the dirt, to know the contract negotiations and who's jumping where. You know, the Monday Night War really kind of set the table for that, but, you know, X-Pac is going to WWF, or, you know, Adam Bomb is going to WCW, is not as juicy a story as what happened at Survivor Series 97. I think the Monday Night War set the table for wrestling fans to have an insatiable appetite for what's really going on, but Montreal was the tipping point, in my opinion, and I think you're dead on as far as it changed perceptions of a lot of people within the industry, people that, you know, now you're learning more about them as people, and it had an effect on everyone, I think, up and down. Even something like Beyond the Mat, it introduced you to behind-the-scenes access that we'd never had, and it sort of laid the groundwork for the creation of a new kind of wrestling fan that we're seeing more and more popularize the audience now.
Yeah,
go ahead, Dan.
Just to add on to that, I think it's not just the wrestling fan change. I think the wrestling media changed as well. I mean, you would have these prior to Montreal, or maybe around that time, you would actually have like live chats with the wrestlers on Nitro or on a show, on a pay-per-view. You'd have Sonny and Brian Pillman answering questions of the pay-per-view viewing audience. So you were starting to get kind of that look behind the curtain, even though I'm sure some of it was kayfabe as well. But you still were getting that kind of access that was never before available. I mean, before it was like, call this hotline or send a letter to send messages of love to Hulk Hogan, have him get well soon. Now you could just get onto your computer and like type, hey, how's it going, Kevin Kelly? What are you doing today? What's going on at the show? And then you would have like kind of that peek in that you didn't have before. And I think then that kind of led to the start of bloggers, you know, guys who were big time fans who now are like, well, I'm a big time fan and I have something to say, so now I might get a story and run with it, as opposed to the kind of the old days of, let's kind of keep this under our hats, we don't want to talk about drugs or steroids or anything like that, we want to actually get this story out there in the open so that the people will know about it. And then that's when stuff like, you would get, you know, the sites we were talking about before. I mean, I'm not sure how much of it was true, but at the time I thought it was gospel reading some of those headlines on WrestleZone, like, ooh,
because it was probably the only perspective you had,
right? Right. So, but I think the point, overall point I was making is, I mean, nowadays, you know, you have, Twitter tough guys talking all kinds of smack all the time. You have various podcasts where people can shout out their rhetoric or what have you. But back then it was kind of like, you know, enter a chat and see what you believe. And then eventually it kind of led to where we are now.
I remember, I think in the early stages of creating the history of WWE.com, I was doing all sorts of, well, I don't know what it was. It probably wasn't Google searching at that point, but trying to find some old card information. And I actually came across a WWE AOL chat from, if you guys can believe it, the Curtain Call MSG show.
Whoa.
They did a live, I don't think it was anything more than, you know, and here's the next match, and there's the winner, and here's the next match, and here's the winner. And obviously they made no mention whatsoever of what happened after the cage match at the end, but that would have been May 1996. So as far back, I mean, certainly there was an online audience before then too, but as far back as May 1996, they were doing some kind of live online coverage of an event that obviously, unless you were there, you had zero access to. And I just thought that was fascinating. Now, were you guys the type that would try to, you know, download video clips or theme songs or anything along those lines? Because I remember at that point, that was really your only, you know, if you wanted to download the Rougeau's theme song, you had to wait about 20 minutes.
Yeah, or longer. I didn't do much. I got into tape trading really early on in my internet experience, and I kind of carried that on throughout, in the sense of if there was anything that I was in the market for or whatever, I would track it down through that medium and you know, expected in the actual mail, just because it took so long. And I don't know, maybe I'm just an impatient person, but I didn't really get into much downloading until, you know, high speed internet became more prevalent, and
you weren't even downloading quite Sunny such a pain photos? In the neck.
Oh gosh, I was. No, I definitely was. Whether it was Sunny, Sable, all you know, Kimberly Page. It was right around that hot spot of, well, I'm going to be trying to be looking for stuff like this anyway. It's a little bit easier to just do it from my computer than it would be to, you know, try to, you know, pay off some bum to buy a magazine for me. But which I never did.
Sounds like you know how that goes. But pictures are different. Just for the record, pictures are different. The very first thing I ever did, the night I got the internet, as soon as everyone went to bed, was look up the Bill McGillicuddy penthouse pictures.
Oh, yep.
That's real life. but as far as like downloading like theme songs or videos, like for me personally and my experience, my connection, that just took forever.
I tried.
So I didn't really fool with it much.
I tried. I wanted to watch. We did a show on this months and months ago, but I tried to relive, because I probably taped over it a long time ago, was Survivor Series 89, which was the first pay-per-view I ever was allowed to get. And it took so long, I just remember. And I got maybe the intro, which again, the intro is pretty good, but that intro probably took me like 3 hours.
Wait, you tried to download the whole thing?
I wasn't bright. I'll say that. I just thought, hey, it would be great. It says just click here. No. I think you guys are learning over the last few shows. I'm kind of not bright when it comes to things.
I would never think that, but I can only imagine the file size of that thing. I remember the stuff I would download, the stuff I could find, would be, you know, like the last 30 seconds of the Bret perfect SummerSlam match.
Mm-hmm.
30 seconds. It would still take you a good 10 minutes. And I thought that was the coolest thing in the world.
Well, you know what's funny? I bet like that file for Survivor Series 89, first of all, it was probably corrupted with viruses. But second of all, I bet that thing was bigger than the capacity of the PC that we had at the time. Like, even if I was able to download it, I'm pretty sure we weren't going to get very far, or I'd lose a lot of important things in the meantime that was on that computer already.
Now, do you guys remember... I was a big AOL chat person because, as you guys kind of said, that's where you can find other wrestling fans around the world. Now I think when you talk about it, it kind of has a little bit of a sleazy connotation to it. But I just remember you would enter the chat room and you would say like, oh, you know, I'm 17, whatever. And then people would always try to trying to remember how stupid it was. Like, the IQ level was something along the lines of, I'm a better wrestling fan than you because I'm good at trivia. And so you kind of have to prove your worth. Did you guys ever have any experiences like that?
Yeah, I think there's always been kind of obnoxious sort of assholes on the internet. But I think for the most part, for at least in my experience, those people were the exception. Most of my experience in like chat rooms, for me, it was the WCW chat room on the Turner.com server. Most of my experiences were positive, and people, you know, shared knowledge, you know, willingly, and but yeah, you always get a couple of rotten apples, so to speak, in the bunch.
Yeah, I was mainly kind of a people watcher in those sorts of things. Like, I was kind of listening to see what other people were saying and seeing if I kind of agree. And then I never tried to go out of my way to create conflict. But a lot of the times it would be a question of, you know, well, I think Hulk Hogan's best match was against the Ultimate Warrior. And then somebody would come back with, are you kidding me? He used to, you know, the Andre, you know, and they would start throwing out names. And, you know, again, no matter where you are, there's always going to be somebody who thinks that their voice is loudest or their opinion means more. And, you know, but I tried to stay out of that. It wasn't anything that I, you know, wanted to make a point of doing, because I'm kind of a pacifist in general. Like, I don't want to, like, cause, even though I'm in the security of my own house and my own computer screen and everything like that, like, I never really wanted to rock the boat whenever I entered those types of chats.
Yeah, I remember I was not ordering many pay-per-views during the Attitude Era. I think that was just a – well, for one, they came on, you know, a good 4 hours earlier in Anchorage than they did, obviously, when they're here in the lower 48 on the East Coast. But I remember for WrestleMania 15 – I got on I don't know if it was WWE AOL chat or just a regular AOL chat or whatever, but that would be like the place to go if you weren't ordering the pay-per-view, if you weren't watching, that would be the place to go to get live coverage. Because everyone, it's kind of like live tweeting. Everyone was live chatting. And here's, okay, and then Rock just hit the Rock Bottom, but Austin kicked out, and then Austin just hit the Stunner, but Rock kicked out, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I vividly remember being in the WWF AOL chat as the Michaels British Bulldog European title match was happening, and it was that same it just generated so much excitement to kind of get the play by play, and you know, someone would say something stupid or outlandish, and then, you know, eight other people would shout him down as, you know, fake, that's not what really just happened. And I don't know, it was exciting. And I guess that's the thing I remember most about it, you know, all these years later, is it was really exciting. And it was like, I need to, you know, get the internet and follow along with people like this. And I'm sure there's people out there that have had the internet since, you know, 1991 or since the 80s or whatever, but it does kind of seem like in talking with the guys today on the show and in talking with some people in general, it kind of seems like the late 90s, maybe even the mid 90s, was when it really started to gain popularity. Like, I remember Brett on the cover of WWF Magazine promoting the AOL WWF site in like 95 or so. So it really seems like the mid to late 90s is when it started to really take off, and you had more and more people on there talking about wrestling and talking about everything else. But there were a lot of interesting sites and interesting groups back then. I remember the one that I always liked was it was called Inside the Squared Circle. It was ITSCWrestling.com, and it was just a series of message boards devoted exclusively to independent wrestling. And I thought that was really, really cool in the late 90s, early 2000s. That's actually the first time I ever saw Grant Sawyer post anything on the internet, was on those message boards. And it was very Southern centric. A lot of North Carolina independent shows posted on their dates, and it was really, really cool in the sense that before, I think I've mentioned on the show before, you know, I spent my childhood going to independent wrestling shows, but it was just a matter of you had to see the poster in the town to know when the show was. And this was a resource that I'd never had before to actually know, okay, this show is happening in this town on this day. It's such a part of our lives now, but I think people take it for granted now what a cool kind of thing it was early on.
Yeah, because at that point, like you said, you were into tape trading, but if you weren't into tape trading at that point, how would you even know about Japan? How would you know about, you know, Bruiser Brody and Stan Hansen or Jushin Liger? Because so many of those guys had just not been on TV in a good long while. So you basically just had to be an old guy to know about, you know, Stan Hansen and Bruno Sammartino and Stan Stasiak and all those kind of guys. And then you've got the internet, and it's just boom, you can track down the stuff. Now, were you guys ever visitors of you know, when we thought about doing this show, I thought we would get a ton of crap if we did not mention RSPW. Were you guys ever on that board?
It had already peaked by the time I got on there in 98. The run had already peaked, and the popularity had already peaked, but it was still there, and I was on it, but I guess in internet terminology, I would be more of what you would call a lurker. I didn't really post much. I didn't really interact with many people that I recall, but I definitely remember feeling like I needed to be on it because I knew of it having been a bigger, more important thing a couple of years earlier.
Yeah, I definitely wasn't, and a lot of it had to do with the fact that besides myself, I really didn't have a lot of wrestling-liking friends by this point. If this had happened back in, the late 80s, early 90s, then I would have had, half my class would have been into it. But by this point, now in my kind of school, it was almost like being a wrestling fan. You had to keep it as a secret for a little bit, at least in my group of friends. Now, I know, obviously, it was a hot product otherwise, and I think there was probably more people watching wrestling at that time that care to admit it today. But yeah, sadly, looking back at it, I probably would have been a little bit more well-informed a lot sooner. But I also might not have – I took a long time off from the watching in general. But I think if it was a more frequent part of my everyday viewing, you know, whether it be participating in chats or lurking, as you say, which is kind of like how I was during those AOL chat rooms, then I might have actually not have had such as long of a layoff as I actually ended up doing.
Yeah,
I want to give just a little bit of background for those that aren't aware of RSPW. This is something that I don't really offhand know how it came to be, but in the early days of the internet, I mean, I found stuff on there from probably 89, maybe. And I really leaned on it early when I was putting this website together, because it would be the only place you could go without having a subscription to the dirt sheets, where you could find firsthand accounts of, hey, you know, this is like May 1990. Hey, just got back from this WCW TV taping, or hey, just got back from this WWF TV taping, and here, you know, here's what you can expect in the next 6 weeks or so. And they would have their own weekly or biweekly shoot news updates where you would read about, and this is, you know, looking 5 years or 6 years after the fact, but you could go back and see, oh, you know, Bret Hart might be jumping to WCW, and that's why he dropped the IC title, you know, whatever. Or all these little things that, were very inside at the time. And it really took the boom of the internet to kind of, you know, put all of us casual fans or us diehard fans that were just too young to have access to that kind of stuff in that world.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of putting it, in the especially when you consider that, like, you know, in the 80s in particular, and even the early 90s, you know, you had the newsletters, and they were popular, but it was kind of like, you know, the newsletters were kind of like a club in the sense that you kind of had to find them, you had to know somebody or know a way in. It was hard to discover the newsletters and kind of smarten yourself up, so to speak, on your own. Somebody kind of had to smarten you up to these things. The internet and the rise in popularity of websites and wrestling news sites, all of a sudden, it smartened everybody up. And we will talk about that explosion of websites and bulletin boards and news groups and everything else that has kind of changed the way modern wrestling is viewed and consumed. We'll talk about all that when we come back from these words from some of the other great shows right here on the Place to Be Nation.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling. Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week, join Marcus Vandenberg and myself for the world's most dangerous sports show and the program that's changing the game one show at a time, the Kings of Sport Podcast. Available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island, and look for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith's blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Welcome back, everybody, to the History of Wrestling Podcast here on the Place to Be Nation. We are talking all things dial-up internet wrestling. And one thing that I had forgotten up until we started talking about it is at some point in the summer of 1998, I started writing, because I wanted to be a journalist, I started writing for some little wrestling website out there. And I was 16 years old, 15 or 16, and I was low enough on the totem pole that they had me doing the Thunder reviews. So I remember I would watch Thunder every week, and I would write a little synopsis of every match, and I would actually do the time of the fall. So you guys know how far back that hyper detail goes back. And I remember every week I would hate with a passion the WCW Motorsports segments in which they tried to put over their NASCAR team and their monster trucks and all that garbage. Did you guys have any – I'm sorry?
I will confess a newfound respect for you because I think I would have lasted about four segments as a reviewer of WCW Thunder before I threw in the towel.
Yeah, that's
so a newfound respect.
Thunder 98 was not so bad. I think it was getting worse, certainly than when the show started in January. But I think by the summer it was still very watchable. And I think the biggest headache for me was, wait, is it on Wednesday or Thursday this week?
Oh, right.
Yeah. Graham, that makes my first experience with Place to Be Nation. I don't know if anybody remembers this, although they can check out the complete archive by typing in my name in the search window.
Did you have to review WCW Motorsports segments?
No, I didn't. But your experience makes my experience of recapping WWE Superstars sound great. Like, you would probably jump at that opportunity, just like one 42-minute show a week, you know, a couple matches, a lot of highlights. That's the life compared to Thunder.
That's nothing. You have to sit through La Parka and Silver King and Kurt Hennig against Jim Neidhart.
Yeah, I don't know what year we're talking about here, but I freaking love, like, 96 Superstars is my absolute favorite.
Give me
all the T.L. Hopper and Who and the Stalker. That's my wrestling right there. I'll review those shows today.
Shawn Michaels against Justin Hawk Bradshaw.
Fuck fuck the Shawn Michaels. Just give me, like, T.L. Hopper.
That was a Superstars match.
The Sultan. Fuck the Shawn Michaels.
No, I had Trent.
Champ is on Superstars. That's a big deal.
Hey guys,
fuck Shawn.
I'm talking like Trent Beretta. I'm talking like.
I love Trent Beretta.
I like the guy too.
Tyson Kidd?
Yeah, Tyson Kidd before his run in NXT, which made him now a tag team champion. Like, you know, I mean, it was not the greatest time to be writing about a B, C, or D show.
Well, the problem with those shows is nothing has any consequence, and it's still a problem today. Is you know, nothing on those shows has any consequence, and of course we're kind of entering into a phase where freaking Raw and SmackDown and pay-per-views have little consequence. But you know, those shows, I don't know, man. It's weird sometimes when there's nothing else going on. You can just spend an hour with one of those shows, and it is kind of, to some extent, it is a little bit like, oh, I didn't know Darren Young still worked here or whatever. But you know, you can see some quality guys on there is the point. And
what did we just talk about on the last show?
Right. Oh gosh, but not to get too far off track, but I mean, it was to your point, it was a good starting point to get kind of back into the swing of writing, but it certainly wasn't anything that I wanted to do on a weekly basis. But this brings up an interesting question. When does Thunder get added to the lineup of the WWE Network?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I can think of so many things today I would rather see than Thunder, which means it will probably happen tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yes.
I'm all for that. They got the Hall of Fame stuff up there now. That's
pretty
awesome.
Pretty excited to get into those soon.
Going back to the initial topic, what were you guys like? What kind of stuff were you spending your days on? I just remember, and the reason I ask is, you know, during this time we get Jericho in the WWF, his debut. During this time, not too far out, we get Taz debut in the WWF, and these are two big debuts that, because of the internet, because of you know, probably even the WWF leaking that kind of stuff out there, we knew who it's going to be. And if anything, I think that kind of helped build the anticipation of it. What do you guys remember about that time frame, the stuff that you were learning specifically about how the business worked?
I absolutely agree with you in the sense that it added to the anticipation. I disagree, however, in the sense that, and this may sound, you know, lame or whatever, but I do believe it, you never know until it happens. Like, Batista could have won that match at 30. Like, there were a couple of near falls at 30 that we still bid on, even though we knew what the finish to the match and of the show had to be. And you never know until it happens. So in my experience, it definitely enhanced the experience of, instead of just having, you know, instead of having, you know, no real front runners as to who's going to answer Kurt Angle's open challenge, you hear that Taz is coming, or you know that Taz is coming at some point, and you hear that it might be tonight. And, you know, Angle's in the ring and he does his promo, and you're, you know, if you're a Taz fan like I was, you're kind of waiting for, you know, the orange light or something that kind of sounds like the ECW music or whatever. It enhanced the experience because you do never know, for sure. You know, I think, you know, this is an example that, you know, had no real urgent consequences recently, but like the Ascension set up a little angle with Darren Young, and Darren Young is going to have a mystery partner. You certainly assume that it's going to be Titus O'Neil and they're going to get that team back together, but you don't know until it happens. And you know, they did that in a way that, you know, they made you wait an extra couple of minutes for the payoff and whatever. And so to me, like, nothing is ever spoiled until it has already happened and been seen. Because, you know, you can change the means of presentation on the fly, even if need be. And so even to this day, and I know the primetime players thing isn't an example of a big catastrophic angle, but you know, even to this day, I'm like, well, you know, you certainly assume it's going to be going in this direction, but you never know until it happens. So in my experience, it helps build the anticipation. What about you, Dan?
Well, I just to get back to it, I kind of, in the specific example of Y2J, I kind of was, I remember reading the report that the countdown was going to lead to a big debut. So then you got to start to thinking about, well, who on WCW could be coming over, or who could they possibly be talking about here? And then as you started to read more of the quote-unquote news stories, I mentioned WrestleZone before, but sites like it were starting to speculate that it was going to be Chris Jericho. Now, coming from where I was watching at the time, I was into WCW, and I was like, well, is Chris Jericho, at the time I remember thinking, is Chris Jericho even big enough to make it worth the countdown? Like, I wasn't even sure at the time. But then as we got closer to the day and the clock was getting lower and lower, it became more apparent, you still kind of had that feeling of, well, how are they going to debut this? Like, how is it going to happen? Is it going to be impactful? Or is it going to be at the very beginning of the show? Is it going to be right at the end of the show? Who is he going to be feuding with? And even watching that show, I remember, like, okay, Rock's in the ring, and he's talking, he's doing his thing, and of course I'm watching because it's Rock. You know, I mean, I remember kind of flipping back and forth, and if Rock was on, or if Austin was on, all right, I guess I'm going to stay on that channel. I'm not going to flip back until after that segment's over. So in a way, it was brilliant, because I'm sure there were a lot of people like me who were WCW fans first at that point, who were flipping over just to see what was going on, and you see Rock in the ring, so you're like, all right, I'll keep this, because this guy is something else, and I can't look away whenever he's on. And that's when the clock comes up. So then you're like, oh, wait, no way. I mean, and again, going back to my thinking at the time, it was, well, Y2J, I don't even know if Chris Jericho is that big of a guy. So what's going to – is he even the guy? I mean, Rock's in the ring, and here's the clock, and we'll see what happens. And all of a sudden, when you saw Jericho on the screen and the eruption of the crowd – I mean, you could say nowadays that, like, okay, well, we're all expecting Batista to come out. Everybody's talking about it. He's even tweeted about it. But at the time, even if a lot of people in that crowd, and you saw some signs in there, so obviously the word was starting to get around, but you wouldn't know it just based on the eruption from the crowd. Like, it was just like, it seemed like it was one of those once-in-a-lifetime moments, and that's what ended up happening. So even though maybe people knew about it, it wasn't spoiled by any stretch of the word at the time, because people loved it.
Right. I don't know if spoiled is the right word. I think that because people weren't – they popped for it. Mm. They gave it the appropriate response, if not even more so. And I think when you say the word spoiled, it's just kind of like, oh, yeah, we knew that was going to happen. Who cares? Let's move on to the next segment.
Right, right. But now it just seems like you can't even possibly get away with a surprise anymore. I mean, like, whether it's Sting's return at Survivor Series, whether it's regardless of what it is nowadays, it seems like people know about it 3 weeks in advance, so you get a little bit of the pop, but not kind of that monumental boom that you got when Y2J came out at that moment.
I was going to say, I'll tell you a great example of not getting spoiled is that segment last year with Rock and Rusev, and Rock just comes out on Raw.
Yeah, absolutely. True.
We didn't know that. That didn't get out there.
Yeah,
but that's the rarity.
I think kind of going back to what Dan was saying, I think a good example of that, recently, is like the Sting debut and reveal at Survivor Series, where a lot of people, you know, kind of expected it, and word got out and whatever. But it didn't, you know, it didn't take away from the moment. It didn't take away from their enjoyment of the moment. On the subject of spoilers, I want to touch on this. Graham, you're one of the only people I know who still makes a conscious effort to avoid spoilers, even in like 2015. How challenging is that now? Because it seems to me like you're maybe at some point we're in the majority as far as trying to avoid spoilers, but it certainly seems like, at least as far as I can tell, among people that I tend to run with, you're in the minority, and most everyone else has acclimated themselves to them and doesn't really mind them. It doesn't really hurt their viewing of the shows anymore.
Well, when I say spoilers, it's not like I'm watching every kind of wrestling out there. Like TNA can tape things 3 months in advance. Well, I'm probably not going to watch that show anyway, so I'm certainly not going to, you know, track down the spoilers. I think primarily I say that in response to SmackDown. And I just think it takes away, you know, there were times in which I would eat all that stuff up and then go watch the show. But then I'm watching the show with very much a critical eye, like, okay, I know the result. Let's just go ahead and get to it. You know, stop trying to take me on this roller coaster of a ride because I know how it finishes. And it just not, it wasn't as much fun. So I would rather just watch the show and not know what's going on. Now, this is a great kind of segue here, because there have been strategic times early on in which the WWF would spoil themselves. You know, Mick Foley beating The Rock on Raw, and then about a year and a half later, Jeff Hardy beating Triple H for the IC title. What do you guys remember about that, and what do you think about that? Because it was very strategic. It was done to get people to tune in. What do you think about that?
Well, I was definitely – they always throw out the stat of how many hundreds of thousands of households switched over to WWE or WWF to Raw from Nitro, and I was definitely one of those cats. Like, again, I was sitting in my bedroom. I was hearing about a guy – you know, I heard Tony Schiavone's announcement. You know, it's funny, prior to that, I listened to the announcing, but, you know, obviously it wasn't anything that I, you know, would remember the next day when I was in school, but I just remember that. Of course, you hear it all the time, but I just remember sitting there saying, really? Like, they're really going to change their champion? Now, of course, this was during
You didn't know, because WWE put it on their website. And it had been taped days in advance, and they put it out, like, that night. So I remember going, holy crap, Raw is a can't miss.
Yeah, I was still a little late to the party, because maybe I had read about it on one of those, you know, dirt sheet sites. And, I, you know, for all I know, I probably did go on WWE, but it didn't really, you know, it didn't resonate, because at the time I was still kind of like Nitro first at that point. And so I was going to watch Nitro regardless. But then when they ever said it, I was like, well, you know, I might as well check it out. I mean, I've heard about it. Other people might, you know, have read about it and told me about it. Why not I just take a look, too? And it just, you know, it wasn't – I don't want to make it sound as big as, like, I'm on the Monday Night War documentary. Like, oh, and then I never looked back. I just needed to see for myself. And it was a cool moment. I don't remember what happened on Nitro that night whatsoever, but I do recall
it was the finger poke of doom.
Yeah, but I do recall seeing a major title change. So mark me as one of the statistics when it came to that particular spoiler.
Yeah, that's a huge night, and the importance of that night cannot be overstated, in the sense that a lot of people, and it was such a well. It wasn't even that they changed the belt. It was such a well done piece of business, with Austin and coming out and getting, you know, maybe the most raucous Austin pop of all time, and it was a chaotic scene with all the guys around ringside. It was such a cool moment that, by comparison, it certainly it made people change their perception of how WCW looked in contrast, doing a very hokey kind of angle. And some people over the years have defended the finger poke thing, and, you know, oh, if Goldberg had come back and ran through all of them, it would have been awesome, and blah, blah, blah. And be that as it may, the initial situation that night, WWF came off as incredible and exciting and, you know, whatever, and WCW came off as hokey and contrived. And you know, you can debate a lot of things about the Monday Night Wars series, and you can debate a lot of the revisionist history, but I could be persuaded to agree with WCW never really recovered after that. And you know, like kind of Graham was getting at, the internet had a lot to do with that as far as they used it to generate buzz for that event. And it's interesting to me that they do that a lot more regularly now. If you follow like the WWE Instagram or something like that, they'll post a picture of someone's, even someone coming back, they'll post a picture in the segment before theirs or whatever. It's, they don't make an enormous deal of it, but the WWE spoiling its own kind of segments on the show, a segment or two ahead, has become even more prevalent in recent years, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, I just remember about that, the Foley and Rock match is, you know, at that point, I was certainly reading spoilers because I would just track down everything. So on Tuesday night or Wednesday or whatever, I would know what's happening on Raw the following Monday. And this one was so special because at no point prior that I remember did the WWF spoil themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and it was you got to believe that it was strategically done to fire at Nitro, because that was going to be a big Nitro. That was on paper, that was supposed to be Goldberg getting his rematch against Nash for the world title after Starrcade. So that they're going to have a world title match in the Georgia Dome with probably 30,000 people there. So wouldn't it make sense for us to do an early attack and you know, draw people to our show too? So they spoiled themselves. And then they did the same, of course, at this point, WCW was no more, but they did the same when Jeff Hardy got an upset for the IC title against Triple H.
Yeah, true. And it's funny because it is very difficult to avoid the spoilers, I think, and it's a credit to you, Graham, that you do sometimes, because I was trying to – actually, one of my projects that I was doing, one of my long-term projects, was to finally catch up on NXT, because, of course, everybody's now watching NXT because of the network and everything. And I was several months behind. It was pretty well documented if in the live chats page of the Place to Be Nation. And with the most recent special event, NXT Rival, and I'm sure you guys have seen it, right? Obvious. That was the day of my truck fire that I wasn't able to get in for our show. And Scott Hudson hates me for it to this day.
No, he doesn't.
He didn't start the fire, just for those people listening out there. He didn't start the
fire. Yes, exactly. I just remember, because I have, like, you know, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, and you almost have to, like, avoid your social networks if you know you're not going to be able to see something live. And it was stupid, because, like, people would retweet pictures, or you would flash by and you would see somebody recommend or like a WWE photo, and it would be a picture of Kevin Owens holding the belt and Sasha Banks. And I was like, ah, you guys, stop. Like, you almost have to go into dark mode to avoid seeing something you don't want to see, you know, before getting spoiled these days. And it wasn't as bad back then, of course.
I think it also goes to the fact that, you know, I try to avoid spoilers for SmackDown and obviously the shows below that. But at this point, you know, what's happening on those shows that, you know, necessitates not being spoiled?
Right. Like, you don't have, what's the can't-miss aspect of them? Yeah.
Right. You don't have huge angles because everything is pretty much Raw. You rarely have a title change. And, you know, back in the Attitude Era, you would have title changes every week on one of the shows, on Raw or SmackDown. So as we continue and we get into our picks of the week before we get into our feedback, Brad, what do you have for card of the week, considering our topic today?
Card of the week is going to be June 28th, 1997, WCW at Inglewood, California, at the Great Western Forum. This was an experiment that WCW tried out. WCW Saturday Nitro, and it was a loaded up house show card with Sting advertised and matches that I'm going to get into in just a second. And it was a loaded up house show card. But it also had the distinction of Mike Tenay, Mark Madden, and Gene Okerlund on commentary for this house show as an internet exclusive broadcast on WCWWrestling.com via Real Audio. In other words, for a nominal fee, I can't remember precisely what it was, you could dial into WCWWrestling.com and listen in Real Audio to Mark Madden, Mike Tenay, and Gene Okerlund doing commentary over this house show. It was a pay-per-listen, so to speak.
Now, not to cut you off, but explain to the modern fan base the appeal of that. Because I think if you're a fan in 2015 and WCW comes to you, you know, this is hypothetical, WCW comes to you and says, give us $5 and you can listen to commentary for a show you can't watch.
Yeah, well, it's a different age now in the sense that there's virtually nothing we can't watch. You know, if you want to see it bad enough, you'll find a stream or find a torrent or whatever. But this was a loaded up house show. It was not going to be on television. And yeah, the only way to, consume this and know what happened and consume this content was, to do it on a pay-per-listen basis, and you would have the action described for you almost like a radio broadcast. And WCW did this a few more times. In a lot of ways, it's kind of like the forerunner of the internet pay-per-view, which has become popular in recent times. And also, this is a big night, historically speaking, because it's the same night that the WWF is running a loaded-up house show in close proximity at Arrowhead Pond. So it's a tense night, both companies, very indicative of the Monday night war that was going on. Results for the card of the week saw Juventud Guerrera, Damian, Super Calo defeat Conan, La Parca, and Volano 4 in a lucha match. Ultimo Dragon defeat Psychosis. Eddie Guerrero defeat Dean Malenko. Rick and Scott Steiner defeat Masachono and Buff Bagwell, representing the NWO. Cruiserweight Champion 6 defeats Rey Mysterio. Prior to that, Chris Jericho had entered and challenged the winner to face him. Both agreed. Jericho ends up defeating 6 in less than a minute to capture his first Cruiserweight Championship. Ric Flair and Roddy Piper. Piper defeats Flair by a submission with the sleeper hold. DDP over on Randy Savage with the Diamond Cutter. Lex Luger and the Giant defeat Hall and Nash on a disqualification when Hulk Hogan interferes. Sting makes the save. So we get a loaded up scene at the end of this with Hogan, Hall, Nash, and the NWO against Sting, Luger, and the Giant, and the good guys standing tall over the NWO. And that's a loaded up house show card for any era. But notable for the card of the week, especially for kind of the earliest ways that WCW tried to use the internet as a tool and even monetize the internet. That's our card of the week this week.
And that's a great pick. I remember when I first got the internet, they were doing some promotion for what I believe was called the Boston Brawl. Mm-hmm. And that would have been in January 98 in Boston. And that was headlined by Sting and Hogan in a cage. And you weren't going to see that anywhere. I think they were building Sting and Hogan for Super Brawl, but you didn't see a cage match between the two unless you tracked down a fan cam or went to a house show. Yeah. And I remember that being a loaded show too. Now, for anyone listening, if you have any access whatsoever to these audio recordings, please reach out to us. I would love to listen to this stuff. There's a few clips on YouTube, fan cam wise, so from fans in the arena that just snuck a camcorder in, but I would love to listen to these recordings. From what I can tell, they have never surfaced after the buyout or anything, but if anyone out there has any leads, I mean, that would be like Christmas morning. The YouTube link of the week, I tracked down, and I had high expectations for this. I was looking on YouTube for days trying to find the perfect clip, trying to find something from the WCW shows that we mentioned, trying to find, a WWF AOL chat or, you know, ad or something like that. Here's what I found, and I think this maybe more than anything else I had in mind puts a younger fan in that environment, in that culture that we've been talking about for this show. And it is staff members of the Nerdist sharing their earliest internet memories. And I watched it just before we went live. It's hilarious for one, but it really puts you in that time frame of the mid-90s, the late-90s, as just a consumer of the internet. Not necessarily a consumer of wrestling information, but a consumer of the internet and how easy we have it now. You had to used to get on the internet. Now we're just always on the internet. So take we'll post this on placetobenation.com, and so you guys can take a look at it.
And I have the network pick of the week, and I'm going to go. It's kind of an easy answer if you think about it. When you see how we've morphed as a more internet-driven society, you go back to 2004. Which is appropriate because if you listen to the Vintage Vaults of the Place to Be podcast, they're in 2004 right now. So eventually they'll do a Vintage Vault on this show. October 19, 2004, it was Taboo Tuesday, where we as fans took control of the WWE superstars of Raw. And, of course, this was the gimmick where you could actually go and vote on the various stipulations for the matches, for those that aren't familiar with this time period. You could vote on such things as the opponent for Chris Jericho, the outfit to fulfill your fantasy diva battle royal, which turned out to be schoolgirl guys by quite a healthy margin. Stipulations also include like a weapon of choice in a match involving Kane. You had the opponent for Triple H, so we had the power to pick who was going to be Triple H's opponent, as well as the stipulation for the main event between Randy Orton and Ric Flair. It's funny because if you go on Wikipedia, you can get what the actual totals and numbers were, which is kind of funny because obviously you'll get to see who won, but then you also get to see who lost. And I wonder who among the masses voted for recent Kevin Kelly Show guest Steven Richards. He only got a paltry 2.2% in the opponent for Chris Jericho category. But I just want to throw a couple of fun facts at this for you guys before I let you go. This was the first regularly scheduled pay-per-view held by WWE on a Tuesday since 1991's This Tuesday in Texas. It was the first regularly scheduled non-Sunday pay-per-view since the 1994 Survivor Series, and the first non-Sunday pay-per-view of any kind since In Your House 8, Beware of Dog 2, because of course that monsoon hurricane storm of the century that blew out the first night of that particular pay-per-view. So Taboo Tuesday, easy to find in the 2004 area of your WWE pay-per-view section, guys.
All right. And in the past week or so, we've been talking on Twitter and on the Facebook about what we were, you know, our topic tonight, and had a fair amount of feedback, probably the most feedback that we've ever had for a show. So a few of these that I'm going to talk about at first are actually from the History of Wrestling Facebook page. We've got Lab – and I, if I destroy anyone's name, my sympathies. I have a name that is often destroyed as well. Labby Margolin said, I remember trying to watch ECW hardcore television on a dial-up, lots of buffering. I can imagine. But also that speaks to, you know, the internet kind of – opening the door to being able to watch that kind of stuff, because unless you lived in certain regions, you weren't going to get hardcore TV. Justin Rosero of The Place to Be. I remember all the crazy rumors in the chat rooms, like Yokozuna beating Shawn Michaels for the title on Raw in May of 96. I don't even remember that crazy rumor.
That would have been amazing.
Justin, yeah. Justin actually wrote something here recently for The Place to Be Nation. It's on placetobenation.com. About his own introduction to the internet and the internet rumors at the time and his own American online experiences. Yeah, so check out placetobenation.com and look up 20 years ago, the big, the bad, the vicious bodyguard and the discovery of insider news. Our other feedback, we've got Okay, this is actually for me. I wrote this, and I've already talked about it, but I'll talk about it again. I remember the AOL chat rooms on pay-per-view nights back in 98, 99, before there were social media. That's the easiest place to get results, as they happened, and have fans pick fights with you for the dumbest reasons. I was also digging up everything I could in early 98 to learn more about the Montreal Screwjob. Dan Kivett, I remember reading on Lords of Pain that Goldberg got fired because he demanded that he have a Star of David on his trunks. I don't think that was the case. we have next. Mike McLean said, I used to be a WWF chat room host for AOL. My God, the wrestling chat never got much past catchphrases, insults, hacking programs, scrolling, swearing, and age sex checks. So you would get in the chat room and type ASL or AS, yeah, age, sex, location. So I know if I want to talk to you or not.
That's how I like to start conversations with people in bars now.
Are you in fact a woman?
I got to check all those things out real quick.
How do you think I got on this show?
Your answer to one of the three must have been favorable.
I guess so.
Patrick Fenton, I remember the AOL WWF area having music files available for download for free. Yes, it took 3 hours to get. Also, clips of the commentary from WrestleMania 12. I'll never forget the last minute of the Iron Man match because I played on my music player all the time. Also, talking to so many different types of wrestling fans in the chat rooms, it opened up my wrestling world to so much more styles and companies than I ever had access to before. On Twitter, so these are folks that tweeted us probably at the history of WWE, at MSTARGJD. Real answer, I think it saved my fandom. Helped me discover tape trading, ECW in Japan at a time when WCW and WWF was garbage. Specifically late 95, but especially 96 and 97 is when I really got online and also back into wrestling. Here is a guy, Brad, that both you and I know, and that is Cecil Miller, at Cecil underscore Miller. Yep. At Cecil underscore Miller. I used to frequent the WWF chat room on AOL under the handle I Hate Sean. And that was all in caps, by the way. I was a total ass. I used to freestyle rap in there, though.
That's amazing.
the next time I see Cecil, I'm going to ask him to freestyle rap for me.
Anyone with the screen name I Hate Sean is good people in my world.
Well, okay, having said that, who do you think is going to be the next response?
Noted Shawn Michaels aficionado, and I haven't seen this because I refuse to look at the formats when Dan sends them, but I'm going to assume the first person to chime in on this particular conversation was noted Shawn Michaels stalker and aficionado Grant Sawyer.
It in fact was.
Bam!
Ed Statmark said, chat room nightly from 95-96 is Chemo Man.
Chemo Man.
Chemo Man. Did he?
He was bald at the time.
Okay, I thought he had cancer or something.
That's so did everybody else. Hence the Chemo Man.
Okay, and he said, I am sure I hated Cecil. So though we got a ton of feedback. That is all of it.
Talked way too much about Sean on this podcast already.
Oh, you're gonna get some heat.
He's just a sexy boy, Brad.
Bring the heat.
He's not your boy toy, okay?
He's absolutely not.
So Dan, for anyone who wants to give Brad some heat for hating on Sean, how can they do that and also provide us feedback?
Well, thank you. For those that are listening, welcome. For those that haven't listened to us yet, what's taking you so long? Well, you probably don't know how to find us. So you could find us by going to place2bnation.com, of course, the home base. You can click on the PTBN podcast banner on the right-hand side or the brand-new Graham Coffin History of Wrestling banner on that right-hand side. In addition, just by subscribing to the Place to Be podcast feed on iTunes, you will automatically receive the latest and greatest episodes of the History of Wrestling podcast. Visit our friends over at Stitcher.com, and you can subscribe to the Place to Be podcast. Get us on that feed as well. Or download the Place to Be Nation podcast app by hitting up placetobe.podbean.com/mobile on your iPhone or iPad. Follow us on Twitter. Leave us some feedback at History of WWE, at Stutzy, at DMACP2B, or the brand new mascot of Place to Be Nation's History of Wrestling podcast, that being Basil the Dog, at King Basil 1110. You could also like us on Facebook. Perhaps you can like Place to Be Nation or History of Wrestling, both on Facebook. If you have questions or suggestions for our final segment, you, of course, know the Twitter handles by now. But if you are going to tweet us, make sure you use that hashtag HOWpodcast. Guys.
Thank you very much. And if this is 1999, we have no concept as to what any of this stuff is. Mm-hmm. As always, check out thehistoryofwwe.com, buy a book, buy a t-shirt. Hell, you know, for the next month or so, if you already have a book, you can win a t-shirt. So check out that for details. I'm giving away one shirt every week during Raw, and then WrestleMania Sunday, we're giving away all three shirts to a lucky fan that has one of our very special books, and I'm knee-deep in working on another one right now. Guys, this has been a blast. I've enjoyed the chat as always, but I think this is a very underrated topic in terms of this industry.
Absolutely. Next time, if we ever do revisit it, I want to talk way less about Shawn Michaels and way more about the Beulah McGillicuddy penthouse pictures.
Amen to that. Also, just a shout out to Justin Rosero. Congratulations to him and his family as they just welcomed in a beautiful baby boy into this world. Alexander Joseph, I called him AJ for short, but congratulations to the Rosero household as well this week. And thanks for leaving that feedback, bro.
Quick, Justin, get your kid on Twitter so he can beat Basil.
Don't beat Basil, I love that dog.
Alright, for all of us, good night everyone, we'll see you soon.
Goodbye.